is episode 722 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and it's hard enough remembering what I did last week sometimes, let alone what my other self might have done last year or perhaps last week as well.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and I really don't know what to do anymore.
Am I primary? This is so confusing. Anyway, we are going to be talking about, we have, I think, 11 shows comprising 12 episodes that we need to get involved with this particular week. And, we have some pretty clear top three and bottom three, so we have a lot to get through. But before we do any of that, Edmund, if you could give us a disclaimer.
Certainly. We will talk about any of the things that might have happened in these episodes. Yes, if you haven't watched them, you will most likely be spoiled.
Indeed, indeed. And as usual, we are going to go ahead and start off with our bottom three. And unfortunately, there are some familiar faces down here. Coming in at an average of 7.5, we have Preacher, Season 1, Episode 8, El Valero. In a fierce gun battle, Jesse faces off against Quincannon and the Meat Men to protect his church. Meanwhile, Tulip tries to save a friend. And like I said, this came in at an average of 7.5. And, pieces of the story are coming together.
Sort of, yes.
Sort of, I guess. In some ways that are somewhat recognizable to traditional plot structure. I don't know. The overall picture is pretty fuzzy, though, still.
Yes. Yeah, although, other than I was aware from what I'd heard some people mention about this series, the question of whether the God of Meat was going to show up and whether they could do it justice apparently is something that we will get an answer to, so, or at least whatever they concoct that approximates an answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just frustratingly vague. Some of this stuff. But anyway, it continues to be a show that I can say has a lot of great scenes and interesting scenes and some very funny moments, this episode included. It's just where it all fits together is still so elusive.
Yes.
So, yeah. That being the case, yes, this one probably one of the, actually, you know, it's coming in around the average that it has been all along.
Yeah.
So, it's just struggling to get above that, you know, relatively average mark that it's been getting. And from what I understand, that's actually a fairly common reaction to the show. Even people who know what's going on because they've read the source material are a little bit frustrated because of the changes that have been made. So, mm-hmm. I know we've said all of this before.
Yeah, yeah. And just want to get a quick take from you. For some reason, it seems that when you're speaking, we're getting some crackle.
Okay. I'm not hearing it, but I will do what I can.
Here. Okay. But, everything you have said was still audible, but yeah, there's something on your end. When you start speaking, it starts crackling. But anyway.
All right.
Okay.
Is it still doing it?
Yes.
Okay. We'll just have to deal with that, I guess. Let's see. Next on the list is Dark Matters, Season 2, Episode 3, I've Seen the Other Side of You. The neural link triggers a dangerous witch, and the crew start to turn against each other while hiding out in empty space in an effort to lose the GA. And this episode came in at an average of 7.17, so definitely more around the average mark. And, yeah, for me, I never really put my finger on what the larger implications were supposed to be for what was going on. How about you, Gary?
There wasn't. First off, I loved the premise in the first two or three episodes last season. It was really good. I really didn't feel we needed to revisit them forgetting who they are all over again.
Yes, indeed.
So that was sort of a link number pain in the neck, number one. Number two, at the end of the episode, we pretty much had a complete reset. It didn't really matter at all. It was almost filler, which was sort of annoying as we have these other people now on the Raza, and we're trying to sort of get a sense of them. And at the same, you know, we start to know things about the guy, of course, but we don't know about the other people yet. And I'd like to see more of their situation instead of going through this oh no, the young one's getting hunted by the people who have forgotten their memory again. It's just, it was a rehash for no reason. And I guess they, you know, I can guess the writers thought, oh, we'll do, well, it'll be a real cutesy thing. And it just did not, it did not come out that way. If that was their intention, it sort of just became a worn over trope for me. There wasn't anything fresh. What would have been fresh would have been other personalities put in. That might have worked a lot better. But just going back to these angry blank slates was dull.
Edmund, anything to add to that?
Yeah, well, no, just I'll re-emphasize. I mean, you know, doing the body swap episode, you know, sometime in the second season or maybe third season, you know, is a bit of a tradition. The problem is on a series like this where you still haven't really gotten a good sense of the what the characters are supposed to be, partially because of this whole starting out as amnesiacs thing. this really didn't have much resonance, and then putting everybody back. It seemed to me that the main reason for doing this was just to remind everybody that yes, this was possible. So yes, and presumably it may then show up sometime later in the season, possibly with our Jake Corso, who's done that thing and sort of been forgotten at the moment. So
yeah, that little plot point. Yeah, Gary, I think you put your finger on it. It seemed like it was treading familiar ground for really no apparent reason, which is why, like I said, I wasn't sure what was the implication supposed to be.
Well, like I said, it was supposed to be cutesy. Oh, well, I know what we'll do. We'll make them forget their memory again. Ah, that'll be funny. And it wasn't.
It wasn't funny. It was not funny at all. All right. And then it still did better than our show at the very bottom here, coming in at an average of 6.17. Ooh, not good, not good. Wayward Pines, Season 2, Episode 8, Past Judgment. Theo and Hassler team up to track down the escaped Abbey leader, Xander presses Rebecca about her condition, and Jason discovers something devastating about Carrie. And, let's see. Yeah, like I said, this came in pretty low, and really there was nothing about this episode that needed to cover an entire hour. This all was like one act, stretched out across that entire episode, and that rarely works out well. What did you think, Gary? You gave it a 5. I mean, you really did not like this episode.
Oh, no. You know, it was like a bunch of chickens wandering around in a coop. there was no development. Nothing happened in the end. We found out that one person is sterile, and then I guess another one might be pregnant. And it was just... Well, that was more excitement than I got through most of the episode.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. But it was just, there was no focus. The leader or the first generation, nobody seems to be stepping up at all to provide any leadership. Everyone's wandering around. Four different people have three different ways to try and hunt down the female who managed to escape. And, of course, they didn't catch her at all. And then the one guy who actually knew what the hell was going on didn't want to share it with anybody else. And so he actually leaves. to go be with the Abbeys, which was actually probably the only redeeming part of the whole episode, was sort of his motivations and what's going on with him. I mean, I have a sense that he's trying to make peace with them, but we'll have to wait and see for that. But at least that's what redeemed it. I probably would have went even lower if it wasn't for that character helping to free the female Abbey and also follow after her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What were you guys? What else can we say?
Yeah. No. Well. Certainly. You know. I agree. I mean. You know. Yes. Our Grizzly Adams-esque mountain man is the only one who seems to have a small amount of sense at this point. Certainly everybody dashing around aimlessly in the streets, shooting willy nilly. Really did, not for the first time in this series, really have me wondering. It's like, okay, does the human race really deserve to survive, given what we're displaying right here? I'm not sure. But, that and you know, yeah, and then the exploration of forced fertility, etc., is just devolving into soap opera tropes is really just not that intriguing at this point.
Yeah, it kind of killed the momentum of what was kind of not great, but at least was giving us something to work with. All right, let's see here. Next on the list. can move on to our top three. And that's probably a much better group than what we were just talking about.
Thank gosh.
Yes, indeed. And we're going to go ahead and start off here with the double episode premiere of Mr. Robot. Yes, season 2, episodes 1 and 2. Unmask. It's one of those strange titles. Yeah. But basically, Unmask. The season 2 premiere finds Elliot in seclusion, Angela happy at E-Corp, and F-Society delivering a malicious payload. And this one coming in at an average of 8.5. And yeah, this is certainly a meditation on the illusion of control.
Oh, yes.
And a really good one at that. Thoughts, Edmund?
Yeah, well, certainly, as a return from that much lauded first season, I did like the way they were immediately going back to that central question of how much of this is or is not in Elliot's head, and so some very very interesting work with him trying to maintain a more analog routine and keeping Mr. Robot at bay, or so he seems, and the way they were twisting all that around, I kind of like that idea of keeping the focus on our main players, and just really trying to keep us inside for now, Elliot's head and Angela's head, and then start spinning out the broader implications from there. But yeah, very very much keeping that focus on what is that nature of perception and reality that they built up last season.
Oh, absolutely, and one can see that it's certainly not going to be an easy journey for Elliot in any way, shape, or form. I mean, just nothing good is happening for him right now. And, he's going to be struggling. And I think that the entire society is going to be struggling. I guess one of the things that maybe this could have gotten into a little more detail on was the fallout from the financial collapse at the end of the first season. Because yeah. I still felt like... even though in my own mind, whenever somebody says, just wait for the collapse to happen, and I keep telling people that this isn't the world of the 30s, and most of society would just function practically the same way it always has. It would just show itself in some interesting ways. I still feel like the way that it was portrayed here was soft-selling it to a certain degree. You kind of almost had to be told and reminded that there had been a major financial collapse.
Yeah, that's true.
So yeah. Many people just kind of doing things like they always have. So, anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, no. I think you're right about that, but I still got that sense that part of it was by for this opening, wanted to keep that focus tight on the characters and not as much on the overall effect yet. But I think that's one of those things that's going to start seeping in pretty much inevitably.
Yeah, one would hope, right? I think that it showed up in the second episode at the very start a little bit more.
Yes, yeah.
But, it's funny because, of course, the timing of stuff was that, you have all those people that are milling around with their cell phones, which I guess one could say that is a bit of an indication of maybe where things are going. And the first thought I had was, hey, look, a bunch of people playing Pokemon Go.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, they're right there in that square because that's where, the Pokestops are. So... anyway, it's probably too close to reality. So that coming in at 8.5, coming in just a hair above that at an 8.67 is our number 2 show for the week, and that is The Last Shift, Season 3, Episode 6, Dog Day. Chandler prepares the final part of his plan as his mission reaches a critical point. Meanwhile, Michener contemplates the fate of his presidency. And yeah, this seemed to be, once again, another sign that the season is picking up steam. A lot of the... previous plot weaknesses seem to have been put into a context here that actually makes things a lot stronger overall. What do you say, Gary? Because you really liked this episode.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was a really good episode. They sort of tied up I shouldn't say they tied up, but they resolved a few small things that have been going since Chandler headed towards the Far East. and they saved the people that are the troops that were captured. They showed that there was a cost to do so, which was nice in this age of the villains all get shot and all the heroes come home unscathed. They, you know, there was a cost, and you know, Chandler, you know, talks about what people, you know, didn't make it through as they were doing this rescue mission. We had some twists and turns. I enjoy the fact that we have, in a sense, two bad guys, not just one that the Nathan James has to deal with. Besides dealing with this pirate who captured the crew, we also have to deal with the I guess the new Chinese government, who's also trying to shoot him and kill them as well. So that's you know, it's definitely high stakes. And as we see on back in the USA, back in St. Louis, that you know, it's not an isolated vacuum type of thing. It's affecting the president and his ability to lead over in the United States, as well as we get to see some of the president's troubles dealing with the regional governors in as they're trying to set everything back up. It's I enjoy that the focus still is on the Nathan James, and at the same time, I enjoy that we get to peek into the world that's, you know, happened post-virus. So it's, I think they're balancing it reasonably well. We're not quite getting a full-on West Wing, but they are keeping up the military action. So between the balance and bringing our guys home, I gave it a 9. I enjoyed it a lot.
How about you, Edmund? Any thoughts to add?
Yeah, no, I think that was this was the show sort of feeling like it was getting the balance right. I mean, it really was the biggest takeaway. I think it was partially having had to spend a few episodes setting up this the new political situation in particular, But yeah, not I don't think it was just because it was like it was the culmination of this storyline, but it just felt the most cohesive, it certainly felt like the captain was in the right place, but we will have to see how they want to parse out that little part of the storyline, and whether his president wants him to keep stepping up, or whether he realizes that maybe he's in the best position right where he is.
Mm-hmm. I have a feeling that you're probably on the right track there.
Yes.
Just the way that the show works. But yeah, Gary, I think you said before, really the best part about it is that they really seem to be bringing certain things to a close at this point, which is allowing the season to turn back towards the kind of activity and storytelling that we were used to a little bit more. It certainly seems to have given the season a little bit of a shot in the arm. All right, and that brings us to our number one show for the week, which takes a big jump up to an average of 9.5, and that is 12 Monkeys, Season 2, Episode 13, Memory of Tomorrow. As Cole and Rayleigh try to find peace living in the past, they encounter a mysterious woman with apocalyptic visions of the future, who tells Cole that his work isn't done, and he must do the unthinkable to save the world. And it all goes downhill from there. Yes, and we love it. Definitely, the season finale second season finale for 12 Monkeys. Just, I know that this is going to be a strange thing to say about 12 Monkeys. It just missed the perfect 10 because some of those plot points were actually pretty predictable.
Yes, well.
And yet, it's 12 Monkeys, so they still left me with my jaw on the floor by the time that the credits rolled.
Absolutely, yes.
But well, we did predict, or at least kind of allude to the prediction, that the witness would turn out to be Cole and Rayleigh's son.
Son, yes.
So guess what? That is apparently how it's turning out. And of course, there were some who predicted that Titan was said to have not been there and then was there because maybe perhaps there was some splinter technology involved. And guess what?
Mm-hmm.
There was.
Yes.
Yeah. So there were a lot of, hey, look, that happened kind of moments, but that didn't matter because the presentation is just really amazing every single time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they've gotten so adept at setting these situations up, and then you know, yeah, then the way they were spooling stuff out. I mean, after that, you know, after that sort of, you know, that shock ending of the next to last episode with everything appearing to have completely failed, and then to bring us back in with, you know, yes, you know, of course, the little idyll with the two of them sort of setting up shop and setting up house and, you know, and, you know, showing the genesis of the witness. But then as they realize what's going on, just the relative speed with which they can then just set up a whole new offshoot, and going back and trying to fix it, and they've set up the world so well that you can just sort of seamlessly go into, you know, this next phase, and just really push the plot, you know, at some rather dizzying speed at times, but they so far always managed to pull it off.
Yeah, I mean, wow, just I have no idea where they're going to wind up going in this next season. That's for sure. There are some places that I think they could go, but I hazard to guess whether or not that is. One of the things I did want to point out was how awesome was it when the doctor was finally able to splinter herself?
Yes.
Oh, of course. Look of glee.
Yes.
And then she's like, not only do I get to do that, but I get to shoot people. She was just so happy. It's like Hanji from Attack on Titan. Yes. Which, of course, is an ironic reference, given the plot that was being played out there. But no. This was a great episode, and certainly a great finale. Much deserved to be at the top of the list this week.
Definitely.
So that being said, we still have a few other episodes that we have to get through here for the week that are more in the middle ground, but still some pretty good episodes, actually, mostly above average. So the first one here, which was in a tie for third place, but not quite there, The Musketeers, Season 3, Episode 8, Prisoner of War. Grimwald kidnaps Aramis during peace negotiations with the Spanish, and the Musketeers battle to rescue him and salvage the Queen's reputation. And this coming in at an average of 8.5, as I said, and yeah, it is starting to get a little intense now, because the series is only a couple episodes from ending. So yeah, it just feels more like the show, just like it did a couple episodes ago when we were talking about it. This is the show hitting its potential.
Yes, and and certainly unlike that, you know, sort of little bobble last episode where they were going a little bit too obvious in the messaging. You know, this I thought was you know, bringing together very nicely. You know, certainly the ongoing villain of Grimaud, and but introducing as well. These behind the scenes negotiations that our Spanish Queen has been undertaking, you know, this was a case of bringing the political in ways which felt much more organic, and certainly like something that could have happened with the Spanish Queen wanting to try and broker a peace, given Louis's condition, etc. Again, a nice mix of action, adventure, and rescue, and all of that good stuff, but with some of the more serious political stuff as well.
Yeah, and two episodes left, so I think they've done a pretty good job of setting up what pretty much has to play out here.
Yeah,
throughout the season, and it's just going to be a matter of seeing who survives the onslaught. And it's not going to be easy, I don't think.
No. Of course not.
No. All right. Next on the list is Killjoys, Season 2, Episode 3, Shaft. A rescue mission to the Badlands goes wrong when the Killjoys encounter an unexpected enemy in an abandoned mine. And this one came in at an average of 8. And, yeah, as far as I can see, things are moving right along as some of those issues that were raised in the premiere finally get some movement.
Yes.
Yeah. And a little bit of a bottle episode per se, I guess. Just basically different versions of the same cave setting.
Yes, of course.
It seemed to work pretty well for me.
Yeah, no, I think the combination of giving us a little bit more on the what's going on behind the scenes at the rack and level six, we talk about these shows saving money where they can. I think this was a pretty classic episode, you know, classic example of limited sets, but still enough going on to give us little bits and pieces of the story. Of course, we're only in the third episode, so not quite everything yet, but enough to keep us going on till next week.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. I do see some of the some similarities to Dark Matter in that they do need to get the season storyline moving a little bit. But I think that it's still pretty successful, and at least this week, it certainly was the more consistent of the two. And Gary, I guess you did not get a chance to catch up with Killjoys this week.
No, I haven't given up on it. I just didn't get to it this week.
Yeah, okay. Next on the list is Outcast, Season 1, Episode 6, From the Shadows It Watches. Reverend Anderson's powers are tested. Patricia reaches out to Kyle, and Sydney issues a warning. Yes, this one coming in at an 8. Again, from my perspective, we've got some solid character progression, tensions being turned to some key relationships, and the demonic plans are starting to flesh out a little bit more, as there are now kind of personifications that we can deal with that help with the exposition. But yeah, this continues to be a creepy show, really is doing everything that I was hoping it would do. And I say that every single week. I'm just surprised, because it's hard for a horror show to ever really live up to it, to my expectations, because it takes a lot to get under my skin. So this one does a really nice job of it. And one thing I did want to point out, I guess, Atticus Ross, who I believe is a longtime contributor or collaborator with Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails. They've done some soundtrack work on things like The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo and Social Network and some other films. He is pretty influential in the soundtrack for this show, and it definitely is evident in the opening sequence, which automatically puts you on edge. And one of the things that I've noticed is that even though you can't hear it, you can definitely tell when they're using it, but they are playing with infrasound and other such things, which is, you know, obviously a very easy way to put people on edge, because that's exactly what it's known to do. But they are definitely using sound in the mix in order to increase the uncertainty on the point of the audience and kind of play on certain fears and such, which is a really nice touch. I'm really enjoying that show. Next, we have Powers, Season 2, Episode 8, Chasing Ghosts. Walker suspects something is amiss with Super Shock. Pilgrim and Cutter check out reports of a mysterious and elusive ghost. Callista's estranged father returns, complicating her life with his latest criminal enterprise. And this one came in at an average of 7.67, and I don't know, for me at least, things haven't really been clicking as well since that whole reveal around Retro Girl and her murder. What about you, Gary?
No, I like it, but I agree, it feels like it had slowed down as far as the moving forward of the plot, although this episode I started to have hope with them having a whole bunch of talk between Diamond and Super Shock that maybe this will spur things to start happening. This whole background also with the ghost, as we get to learn slightly more about him in a unique expository way, I have to say. I sort of enjoyed the way that sort of his history got revealed to us in this episode through use of the I guess it was a reporter or talk show host. Podcast person. I take that back. She was podcasting. So I enjoyed that take on the information, and I found the Super Shock's Native American medicine to heal Diamond's headaches to be interesting, especially when he started shaking the whatever stick it was that he was shaking on top of it. So it had had a few good moments. Then I still don't quite get the whole Retro Girl with her father, the bank robber. That was definitely a weak part of the show for me. Which of the, I guess, three plots of the show did you like best?
How about you, Edmund?
Yeah, for me, yeah, the stuff with Super Shock and Diamond, and you know, and certainly the ways in which you know, Super Shock is you know, is being played out as somebody who's certainly got issues and may not be that reliable, was the highlight for me. The stuff with I guess we should call her new retro girl, and her father. I didn't really find it. I didn't find it completely believable. They seem to be just playing them out as you know, as these stereotypes. And which for me just made that ending more be there more for shock value, in you know, in terms of her taking him out in such a cold blooded way, and then the thing with the ghost, I mean, in between, I was also finding that you know, the whole trope of, you know, yes, go in without your partner to get confronted by the supervillain and get taken out, was all done in a fairly rote way, unfortunately.
I think unfortunately that can be said for a lot of this episode.
Yeah.
Which, like I said, it feels like it's lost a little momentum without that mystery of who killed Retro Girl. But they are trying to set things up for the end of the season, so hopefully things will work out.
Yeah, no, I think that's the automatic problem with this sort of storyline when you bring in this other villain, you know, literally out of nowhere, to try and hang the end of the season around. You know, if they had perhaps, in terms of some of those references to the previous team, if they'd been able to drop some hints, it might have more resonance than the way it's playing now.
That's true. All right, the next show on the list, and the final show for this week, is a new series that just started called Stranger Things. And this would be, of course, Season 1, Episode 1, The Vanishing of Will Byers. And thank God this did not say pilot as the title for its first episode. But anyway, this one came in at an average of 7.5, which I will hasten to add is still well above what usually winds up being the score for a first episode. For me, I just thought that this was full of nice little nostalgic factors. It's very obviously meant to evoke some memories and fond memories of Steven Spielberg and Stephen King movies from the 80s. Stand By Me comes to mind, and there's a couple others, of course, that probably others could cite. But yeah, to me, this was a pretty solid start. But Gary, you seem to think it was a little more average.
Well, yeah, I guess. Jeez. Well, I see what you're saying about the homages to, you know, to Stephen King and the like, and definitely the first 15 minutes were so hip deep in the 80s. You know, I was looking for parachute pants to put on, but it was a little too much in my opinion. I don't mind references to it or including it as necessary, but here they seem to be taking it and whacking us over the head with it, and that I didn't enjoy that much. You know, it almost reminds me of how the that 70s show would push. You know, push the 70s, or the Goldberg show that's currently on pushes the 80s. It's a little too hard and too much in my face, where it didn't help the story. It sort of overtook the story to some extent. Oh, look at that reference. Oh, look at that reference. Oh, isn't that cute? Oh, I see what they're doing there. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. Can I hear this? You know, I want to hear the story first. That's only supposed to complement it. It's not supposed to overwhelm it, which is what it did for me. And I think even they realized that, because as the episode went on, it started to tone down a little bit. I'm not saying you couldn't tell you were in the past, but it wasn't in your face the way it was in the beginning. And that's when the episode started to pick up a little bit for me. And then finally, I had to only give it. I had to keep it where I was because they killed the cook. I really liked him, and I wanted to see more of him. It seemed like they were really developing him, and then they shoot him dead. I was upset and ranked it accordingly.
All right. Yeah, that's it then for this week. And yeah, that's next week. I think we have fewer episodes to to talk about, which is fine. We are in that kind of period of the summer. But a couple shows here that we're watching are close to the end of their runs. So we might have a little bit of time later this summer to actually get through some other things, like the rest of our recap from last season, which unfortunately we're just not going to get into very much this time because we are running out of time since we had a lot to talk about in terms of Star Trek and then all this news that came out. One thing I did want to do is update. We do have a couple new news items here. One okay. of interest. The new Mystery Science Theater 3000 coming to Netflix.
Ooh.
That's right. The Kickstarter not only resurrected the show, but there was so much support and money given to the beloved Muppets making fun of cheesy movies that Netflix has acquired a new series, but that may not be all. The Hollywood Reporter confirms that Jonah Ray will be the new host, Felicia Day and Patton Oswalt, the new Mads,
wow.
and Quentin Yount and Baron Vaughn as the new voices of the bots. But then they also say this. Mary Jo Pell, Bill Corbett, and Kevin Murphy from the original cast will reprise their roles in the new series. So that's a little confusing since they're kind of recasting, but not recasting. So how does that work?
Well, John, as a Kickstart supporter of that project, you're welcome.
Yeah, right? Right?
Yeah, I hopped on it reasonably early in the process because I've always loved the show and I've been looking forward to it. And actually, as they started adding people like Felicia Day and Patton Oswalt, as the Kickstarter was starting to go up in value, it was almost a prize level benefit. Oh, if we get to this level, then we're bringing on a surprise person. And then, you know, they announced, I think, Felicia Day first, then Patton Oswalt after that, as well as drastically increasing the number of episodes that are going to come out. And there's a whole lot of little spiffy things they said they're sending our way as a result of donating to the Kickstarter. And I believe you could still contribute to it and pick up a few, and they might be able to get enough money to make episodes. But now that Netflix is getting those episodes, are they paying them more money? And if so, I hope that money is going to a second season at this point.
Yeah, it seemed like what they alluded to at one point was that they were hoping that something like this would happen so that they could fund future episodes.
Mm.
They seemed very much open and transparent about that. So I hope that they follow through with it.
Oh, yeah. They've been following through so far, and it's been a very smooth process, as well as they're constantly sending updates. Some Kickstarters don't really sort of update you at all, or you get minimal news. I'm getting emails every few weeks with the latest news up, news and what's happening like that. I just downloaded some of my digital perks this evening, actually, including some really nice ringtones. So, definitely they are putting their heart into this and they're trying to do it right, just like they always do, really. And hopefully the audience will stay with them for a few extra seasons this time around.
Yeah, that I guess we'll find out soon enough. But Netflix is a good home for this kind of thing because Netflix seems to be a good home for a lot of things lately. So, yeah. Of course, there was also a lot of news that came out of Marvel's panel, but I really haven't had an opportunity to parse through all of this yet. Some of it is duplication of what we've seen before, but it looks like there is some stuff in there about Guardians of the Galaxy. I don't want to be the one to spoil anybody. I'll just leave it at that. We know who his father is now, supposedly.
Yes.
Okay, so as far as this week goes, any open topics, anything interesting that may have happened in the last week? Gary?
I have finally finished one of my costumes for Dragon Con, which was exciting that I finally got it all put together. Just let me think what else. I've started a rewatch of Game of Thrones, and I'm seeing clues that I missed the first time around that now I can go, oh, hey, oh, that makes sense now. Oh, I see that. And as I watched the first few episodes, I'm convinced the reason all the Seven Empires fell apart was all Sansa's fault. It's really blatantly obvious. Go back and watch. It's all her fault.
Of course, yes.
If she had just told the truth, all this would have been avoided. Just all of this week, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. Oh,
wow. Okay. And how about you, Edmund?
Nothing much to report. I am cruising through American Gods and enjoying it greatly. Thanks to Amazon Prime Day, I've finally given in and am now part of the Kindle universe and empire.
Ah, I see.
Yes, no, because for many years I've been using a Sony, which has the Kindle app on it, but for various reasons, primary among them being the fact that I love the Sony design, but they are not making e-readers anymore. I felt it was prudent to take advantage of the extremely low price of a refurbished one, so... All of those free ebooks that I buy via my daily newsletters now have their own home.
Yeah, it's very nice, very nice. And ironically, I've been moving more towards having hard copies again, just for lately because it's been more convenient. Although there are times where I literally will have the same book. For various reasons, I have the hard copy. I will then move to the digital version that's on my computer.
Yes.
In an app, and then just switch between apps for a while. Mm-hmm. And then eventually, you know, the next morning, I'll wind up just going to the hard copy, flipping the pages to where I now am, and resuming that way. So it.
Wait a minute. You mean your hard copy can't sync with the apps yet? What's wrong with these people?
That nonsense. Isn't that what the bookmark is for? It's supposed to automatically move?
Yes.
Well, John, maybe you got an old version. Maybe you got your bookmarking app. I don't know.
I got to look for the USB connection on the spine of the book and see if I can update the firmware. Certainly the nice thing about dedicated e-readers is that they don't really need to. They're basically designed to optimize the reading experience. Correct. So,
oh, yes.
Yeah. I took advantage of Prime Day by getting a $125 power block for $15.
That's a pretty good way to celebrate, yes.
Yes, to basically extend our Pokemon Go sessions as we roam around the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
That really uses battery power a lot. But hey, you know, it's getting everyone out of the house. Well, not everybody, but everybody who's playing. Other than that, I was away this past week, as some people know, if they're following me on Facebook and such, out in the Great White North, which wasn't quite white this time. It's their, I guess, 5 weeks of summer. I'm not the only one who says that, by the way.
I know.
The guys who are up there
refer
to it as their 5 weeks of summer.
Hmm.
Yes, they had days back in June where it was below zero. But thankfully, not while I was there. It was basically in, 70s and 80s would be the equivalent.
Hey. So how was the CBC convention? Are there any new shows coming down the pike?
I did not see anything particularly new that we didn't already know about. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm still pushing for the formal creation of the CBC America channel rather than the informal one that we have. While I was away, I did manage to get some reading done. There's this nice little novella that is called, it's an Attack on Titan one. It's a collection of short stories called Lost Girls. And it has a couple of short stories. One is focused on Mikasa, and the other one is focused on Annie. And I was really pleasantly surprised. I was expecting them to be somewhat shallow, because it's only, you know, a couple hundred pages, but... In the end, I really felt like, especially the Annie story, was surprisingly in-depth and fleshed out the world behind the walls in some really interesting ways.
Hmm.
And, I would recommend it. I think it was relatively cheap, but it just came out, from what I understand. They are going to do a manga adaptation of the stories at some point, but I really feel like, reading it in the prose... format as it was originally done is the right way to go. I was so impressed with the anyone that I was actually sad that they didn't make an OVA out of it, because I think it would make an excellent story. So, but it's written by the guy who was, I believe he was the director or main producer for the anime's first season. So someone who really knows that world pretty well. And nice job. I would definitely recommend it if you're a fan of that series. Go ahead and check it out. I got my copy at Barnes & Noble, so no, I didn't need to go through any jump through any hoops in order to get it.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. Beyond that, I've been reading a Star Trek Voyager book called A Pocket Full of Lies, and it's really quite good. It not only was very convenient to take with me for my airplane trip, but this particular novel delves into some of the territory that was explored in the infamous Year of Hell episodes.
Okay.
which was the one where they were up against the time ship that looked surprisingly like the Babylon station.
Yes, indeed. I remember it well.
I'm sure you do. But that was easily one of my favorite seasons of the show, because that was one of the more interesting plot lines that they flirted with. And for it to be kind of a main section of this particular novel in terms of exploring the consequences or some of the ramifications of it, really quite intriguing. Some dense stuff. It's written by Kristen Bear, who is also, I think it's either Kristen or Kirsten Bear. She is the one who joined the writing staff for Star Trek Discovery. So knowing that she's doing a really bang-up job of this particular novel, once again, gives me great confidence that she's going to do a good job for Mr. Fuller.
That's excellent.
Yes, that's why I wanted to bring it up, because it kind of brings us full circle. Like so many time travel plots in Star Trek.
Indeed.
All right, beyond that, so unfortunately, since I was away, I did not make too much progress on anything else, although I am playing a little bit of LEGO Star Wars The Force Awakens. That's fun. So, all right. If that's it, and there are no last thoughts, then we will go ahead and wrap up the week here. As I said, next week we have a good slate of episodes, and who knows what other things we might get ourselves into. So, until next time.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates, but let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.